First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. You can also just tell your smart speakers to talk to ESPN Radio, play a little of it. That's what we do. I'm Jason Fitz. We start you off, as always, with the headlines you need to know. Starts with some drama. The wife of Baltimore Ravens star Earl Thomas was arrested last month in Texas after a domestic altercation between the couple. A team spokesman said Thursday the Ravens aware of the situation, although Thomas did not notify the team of the incident. According to documents obtained by TMZ, Earl Thomas's wife held a loaded gun at his head after she allegedly caught him cheating on her. She used Snapchat to track Earl Thomas to an Austin rental home, found him in bed with his brother and other women, according to the report. So she placed Earl Thomas's 9mm gun less than a foot away from his head with the safety disengaged and her finger on the trigger. She's now since been charged as a result with several different crimes in the process. It should be noted Earl Thomas has not been charged with anything. Next up, in your headlines you need to know, Major League Baseball is at least laying out a return to work proposal expected within the week, sources say. Major League Baseball expects to offer a return to play proposal to the MLB Players Association within a week. Teams have begun to encourage players to prepare for an, quote, spring training, according to Jeff Passan. They could begin in mid-June and a season that could start in early July. Again, I have to stress, this is simply a proposal that's going to Major League Baseball's players as they begin to figure out what to look for moving forward with the future of Major League Baseball. And speaking of interesting ways to look towards the future, we've been talking about college football and whether or not some conferences could play while others do not this fall. Well, let's take it a step further. Penn State's head coach James Franklin says conferences should play even without all of their members. If state governments and medical experts allow a majority of schools within a conference to play college football, they should play even if coronavirus restrictions prevents a few other teams within the same league from returning. That's what Penn State coach James Franklin told reporters Wednesday. He said he expects a, quote, way inconsistent return across the Power Five conferences because of varying state restrictions and reopening plans. Quote, I can't imagine that right now we're all going to open at the same time. If the SEC, for example, opens up a month earlier than the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is able to open up in 12 of the 14 schools, if the two schools can't open, I don't see a conference, any conference, penalizing 80 or 75% of the schools because 25% of them can't open. So, staggering words from coaches. He's looking at, we're not just talking about which conferences are going to open up. We're talking at this point about which teams within conferences might open. Should be interesting to keep an eye on that moving forward. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and of course, you're everywhere. We're everywhere. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Those are the headlines that you need. And, we're going to get to a lot of different takes today, but we want to get your take. Yesterday we did such a positive action. We did, you know, which head coach and superstar was the best, right? That was yesterday. So today we decided we'd have a little fun in the opposite direction. Instead of looking at the best, we're going to look at the worst. My question to you is at this point, which star player do you think has been most wasted by his team? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun. Which star player in any sport has been most wasted by their team? And I will go all time. So you can give me the Barry Sanders, the Dan Marinos. I want to go up and down the spectrum of who you think has been most wasted. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. Also a fun way to get in the conversation. But we're going to start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G, just $45 a month, saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. We got some Straight Talk last night from Spain and Company, and it came from Craig Hodges, the former Chicago Bull, who was a teammate of Michael Jordan and doesn't appreciate some of what we've heard from MJ throughout the course of The Last Dance. Craig Hodges, not mincing any words last night on Spain and Company.
Well, you know, for me, just watching it unfold and seeing how, really, I'm not going to say one side it is, but it's Michael's documentary, man. And for me, it's one of those things that, you know, we not just MJ, but we did some great things in as far as bringing the championship to the city of Chicago. We took ass whoopers from Detroit, and it wasn't just no one person taking those. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's about we spread the wealth, we spread the ball, and many people took, you know, took less shots, took less attempts so that MJ could be on the roles that he was on at times. So it's one of those things that, you know, you look at it and you take it for the commercial value that it is. It's entertainment at a time when America needs some entertainment. But at the same time, I think it's kind of hard to really, when you talk about a documentary of a person and that person has some control over the way the documentary is laid out, you know, so I take Ken Burns' advice and see where he stands, one of the world's best documentarians, and he said it shouldn't have been done that way. So, you know, I just feel bad. You know, I feel bad for Scotty. I feel bad for Horace. I feel bad for the brothers. And it's almost a matter of who you're going to throw under the bus next.
Wow, that's some strong words from Craig Hodges. It should be noted, Michael Jordan's the one that at least had this concept. Michael Jordan's the one that brought in the filming crew to follow him for the year. Michael Jordan, from the get-go, has owned all of the footage. So as much as documentarians like Ken Burns wouldn't do it this way, we don't get any look at it were it not for Michael Jordan. So, of course, he's going to control part of the narrative. And Craig Hodges has also been loud about the fact that he doesn't like some of the descriptions that were made of the Bulls teams that he were on, because it broke sort of the fraternity of the brotherhood of what it meant to play on those teams by calling people out with quotes like cocaine circus. To that, I would argue, do I really care about protecting your fraternity if I can watch a great story? Heck no. Heck no, I don't. Now, Jay Williams joined Max and Stephen A. to talk about Craig Hodges' comments and particularly how one-sided the Michael Jordan doc could be. This is what they had to say.
It is about Jordan's view primarily, because Jordan is, he and his team get final approval. What I would sit up there and say is that, did he lie about that? Did he hide that? Did we not know that? This is a documentary that clearly leans on Jordan's perspective of things. For example, when they talk about Jordan and the whole gambling issues and how everybody was bothering him because he went to Atlantic City, you know, they show him dropping 54 on the Knicks, but they gave the impression that he came out from being down 0-2 to the Knicks in 93, and then he just exploded for 54. Actually, he shot like 3 of 18 from the field in Game 3, and it was Scottie Pippen that did damage in Game 3 with 29 points, and it was Jordan who then exploded in Game 4. So clearly there are things from a basketball perspective that are missing, along with other things, but in the end, as long as Jordan is honest about the fact that he has control to some degree and everybody knows it, he's giving it to you from his perspective. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I'm unsurprised by Jordan's kind of disposition here. Guys, remember his Hall of Fame speech? Everyone's assembled there. Teammates, his children, everyone's assembled there. It's almost like Jordan was going at him. He is very competitive. And it wasn't even about insulting anyone or competing with anyone. I don't think the Hall of Fame speech. It's about, you mentioned earlier, Jay, you know, people's truth. That's the new buzzword, right? This one's truth, that one's truth, your truth, their truth. Knowing that people perceive events differently and what's true to them may not be true to you. Not that you're disputing the facts, but the facts that you choose to perceive and how you perceive them, what's true to you. Jordan's truth is not going to be kind to everyone all the time. I wouldn't say it's a matter of that he needs to be generous or ungenerous. It's just that's the way he sees things. And of course, if he's telling his story, there will be collateral damage for some of the characters. By the way, that's true of any story worth telling. If you simply sanitize your version of the truth to put it out there to respect everyone's feelings, it will not be interesting to hear. Any story worth telling will not be sanitized. There will be some dirty laundry aired, and sure, those who feel like Jordan's airing their dirty laundry are not going to be happy with him right now.
Yeah, Max, I'm with both you guys. I agree. Like, look, Jordan has every right in the world to tell his story from his own vantage point. You know, I got a chance to interview Jason Hare, who was the producer on this through the boardroom, and he talked about how big of a role that brand Jordan had in this with ESPN and with Netflix, and about the amount of attention they wanted on detail about certain things. So, you know, but that's the point that you bring up is the interesting one on the back end of this. I'm not talking about right now, because Stephen A. Smith, you said everybody knows this from Jordan's perspective. It's going to be interesting to see in 10, 15 years from now, though, when people don't know that that's just from Michael Jordan's perspective, and if they mistaken those things as factual things that happen with the team, because it is labeled as a documentary. And when you see documentary, you think those are about facts more so than opinions from somebody's life. That's where it's going to be interesting.
First Take, your take on ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Don't forget, tune into The Last Dance, the behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcasts, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Again, Michael Jordan is the one that started this concept. Michael Jordan is the one that brought the filming crew in. Michael Jordan is the one that has owned the footage. Michael Jordan is the one that has controlled everything that we've seen through all of this entire process. So, of course, it's going to be spun towards Michael Jordan. That's fair. That's fine. Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen, they're grown men. They can speak for themselves. They have spoken. Scottie Pippen certainly has a platform with this network. I mean, if he has a serious issue with the way anything is being portrayed, Scottie Pippen has a microphone that we will gladly give him any time, day or night. Hell, we gave Craig Hodges a microphone so he could talk about his issues with the entire documentary. So let's not pretend at this point that Michael Jordan's allowed to create and craft some narrative that can't be clapped back on. If players really have an issue with this, they have the ability, the capability to come out and speak. In fact, what have we seen after every episode? Players that have issues, Isaiah Thomas, we haven't heard this much from Isaiah Thomas that people have cared about in years. So, yes, Craig Hodges can be absolutely right that you know, at some point this is all spun towards Michael Jordan. But let's not pretend that everybody that it's spun against doesn't have the availability, the ability to come out and speak for themselves. Horace Grant is an adult. Scottie Pippen is an adult. If they have a problem with Michael Jordan and what is being said, they can speak for themselves. They don't need Craig Hodges to do it. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Don't forget ESPN Radio presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Some big stuff happening in the NFL tonight. We're getting the schedule released. Now, I laugh at that a little bit. Look, we know the opponents. Like, I know every team my beloved Raiders are going to play already, right? But tonight, we find out the order, the whens, the hows, the wheres, how many national games, all that fun stuff. So we're going to break it down now with one of my favorites. Diana Rossini joins the show. Diana, thanks for the time. What do you look for on schedule release when you know the opponents? What are you interested to see tonight?
For me, everyone has like their own style of what they care about, obviously. But for me, I like to just see teams' travel schedules. You know, who's on the road? Who finishes the season on the road? Obviously, who's got those short weeks, who's got, you know, where the buys fall, I think are always important. No team ever wants them early in the season. And I think really what makes this the hardest, Jay, is it's so difficult right now to try to navigate what we're going through as a country, as a world, with the COVID-19 situation, with these condensed off seasons and virtual meetings that these organizations are conducting, that I'm interested to see how this is going to affect the schedule. What's the contingency plans here? Are there going to be any that we're going to be able to see tonight? Or is the league just sticking with the 17 games like we see every season and we look forward to it like a normal year? So those are the things that I'm definitely going to be looking out for. And then, of course, I want to have some fun with those weird matchups and the drama ones, you know, whether it's Packers and Bucks, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, a little Back to the Future type of situation where, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going, maybe I'm going to have to be Tom Brady one day and do what he does and leave my organization, despite the fact that I said I wanted to play here for the rest of my life.
We're talking to Diana Rossini joining the show. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. So you referenced contingency plans. Last night, there were some reports and some Twitter knowledge coming out saying that the NFL might look at putting the interconference games the first 4 weeks to sort of spread out games that might be able to be canceled in the first 4 weeks and not affect tiebreakers. Today, we're hearing that may not be the case. Have you heard anything on what the latest is with that?
Yeah, that is not the case, actually. So I can tell you right now that it actually made sense when I first saw that rumor. I was like, oh, okay, I understand what they're doing here, you know, because those are games that you can just kind of throw away because, you know, the conference games are the ones that matter most within the division. But from what I've been able to find out over the last few hours from talking to different teams who've may have gotten a little peek at their schedules, that doesn't seem to be the way it's worked out at this point. So while it made sense, look forward to, you know, in-conference matchups come September.
Well, and that's a great question then, Diana. Should they have put those games at the front to give themselves some protection?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like it made sense. The problem is the league keeps saying the same thing right now, which is they're not really sure how they're going to do this. They don't have a contingency plan in place. From what we know of at this point, you know, at 1:15 Eastern. But I think with the way COVID-19 has impacted a lot of areas, I think it's safe to say every time we think we're getting close to the end, it's not. I'm in the New Jersey, New York area, you know, where it's hit the hardest. And every time I feel like things are close, they just keep getting pushed back further and further. And the league is watching this. They're well aware of what it's like on the East Coast. And who knows if it's going to get under control in other areas. So it sounds like it made sense, but it doesn't seem like the league thinks that they're going to need it.
We're talking to Diana Rossini on First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So let me ask you the question on behalf of every fan that's ever watched the schedule release show. All right, I'm going to put my fan hat back on from a few years sitting, you know, watching these shows all the time. The great conspiracy theory is that the league is out to get certain teams and they just don't care about, you know, mileage or weather or all of these things. Walk me through, from what you know, the schedule process and any concept of a conspiracy theory. How is there one?
I like that people think that. And I can tell you there are certainly coaches I've talked to in the league and GMs who also believe it. And, you know, there isn't. I think if anything, if there's anything anyone should put any weight into, it's a business decision. It's what's going to make the most money, what's going to make the most sense. You know, going back to what we talked about earlier about things I like to look for while – you know, obviously fans just want to see good matchups. I love seeing which matchups call for prime time action, what networks you're going to get which games. I think that's where there's some conspiracy theories of who gets what game. I would love to be in on those meetings. I don't have any sources who sit in on those. I'm sure we have bosses that do it. But I'd love to know how they choose and pick and why the league decides to give NBC certain games and CBS others. And you know, Monday Night Football gets this lineup, which I like to think Monday Night Football is going to get a great lineup this year. But you never know. So I think if there's any conspiracy, it's more about the business side of it than it is about personal vendettas between perhaps the commissioner and certain organizations that I think we could all kind of figure out in our head who we think have beef with him.
All right, Diana, there are two new stadiums opening, which is interesting for the league, in L.A. and Vegas this year. So as these stadiums open, you know, any expectation on how the league will handle in giving two stadiums and three teams sufficient shine for their new stadiums?
I know, though that definitely falls under the question mark category. And I hate coming on your show and not having awesome answers for you, but this is a league thing. You know, they don't know. They don't have plans yet. And, you know, you got to figure, you know, there's so much that goes into these plans and how they want to unveil the new stadiums. And obviously the fans want to be part of this. And with us not knowing what September is going to be, you know, the Las Vegas Raiders are going to have a home game in September. It's going to happen. So it's how are they going to handle this? And are they going to get that same anointing that I think we've all seen in the past with other stadiums and arenas? And, you know, I think if I was to just predict at this point right now, I don't think it's going to get nearly the amount of love that we would love to see. I think until we can figure out, as we get closer to the season, for now, the league is acting like we're going straight on as is. But I think we all have common sense to say that that's probably not going to be the reality.
Diana Rossini joining us. I should ask you one non-schedule question. Everybody's still got all eyes on Jadeveon Clowney and the Seahawks. And what's the latest for Clowney around the league?
So there were some reports yesterday. A local reporter in Houston did a really good job of chatting with Clowney, who was working out in Houston. And, you know, he revealed in that interview that he was, you know, kind of sitting back and taking a look at those options, which is exactly the way the teams that are interested in him believe how he's operating, because the number he's looking for still isn't what these teams are willing to offer. I can tell you that the Las Vegas Raiders they're out on him. I know there were some reports that they were in. They are not in on him. And from what I can tell from just checking in today, it seems like the Titans and the Seahawks are still the two teams that are hoping to get to a number to try to land them. It's just when Clowney's going to decide what team he wants to go to.
You guys can follow her, as always, on Twitter. Nobody does it better, at Diana ESPN. Diana, we appreciate your time. And, you know, next time we'll dive into more conspiracy theories. I just, anything to, you know, give us some solution on whether or not we really landed on the moon. You guys can follow her on Twitter.
Exactly. I'm just excited, though, to just talk some matchups tonight. You know, even though we don't know when it will be, if it will be, but kind of feels like a little bit of, we got a little football action tonight. So thanks, guys.
Diana, have a great day. She's the best. And look, we're all in this boat. Like, we're going to be watching tonight. And I joke about it. Like, look, you can Google it right now. Google your favorite team followed by, I don't know, 2024 schedule. You'll be able to find 14 of the 16 games are already predetermined for the next several years. So there's very little, and every year at the last day of the season, the last two games are added. You already know who your favorite team is going to play. There's a process to figure all of that out, but we are going to salivate over the show tonight because, frankly, we're starved for any NFL to talk about. And as Diana just reported, and this is important, you know, there were reports yesterday that they were going to push all the conference, the non-conference matchups at the beginning of the season so they'd have some flexibility to cancel games. And Diana's telling us straight up that that is not the case. So what does that tell us? That tells us the NFL is going in aggressively planning on a season coming in. I mean, they're coming in with the mindset of we're going to go forth and we are going to do what we would usually do. So that's going to be interesting to check out. By the way, you can check out ESPN tonight for the schedule release. Always a great time. And Trey Wingo going to join us later in the show. We'll get Trey's thoughts on everything that's happening there. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Coming up, what's your confidence level that the Cowboys and Dak are going to get a deal done? Plus, you guys are chiming in on the most wasted athlete. We'll get more of your take coming up. All of that is next. But first, well, you can't believe everything on social media today. You can't believe it's possible to start a new life as an IT pro in just 4 months from the comfort of your own home, even if you have zero computer experience. Instead of waiting to see what happens when life gets back to normal, take control of your future now. Make the best of this time. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. Live online classes meet just twice a week. You can do this. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. We'll get more of your rocket science takes coming up next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio.
Regular season MVP has never motivated me. To be the best, to ever play the game has motivated me.
We're counting down the NBA's best with our First Take primetime players.
That's pretty interesting.
Each day, we'll reveal and debate a player from our top 15 rankings as voted on by our ESPN NBA experts. Who's in? Who's out? Who's number one? You'll know I'll have something to say about all this. First Take NBA primetime players, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. That's going to be fire next week. There's one thing you know the guys are going to get debating on, legacy of different players and the top 15 players in the NBA. As they go up and down that list, you guys will be able to chime in too. Going to be an easy week of NBA fun next week as the First Take goes through that, and we'll help you guys join in on that conversation as well. Today, we're asking you which superstar player has been the most wasted by his team. Yesterday was all positive. So today we thought we'd have a little fun from the other side. Who's out there that's just not being utilized, that's just been wasted by their team? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Let's take Lucas in Washington. Lucas, who you have as the most wasted player from his team?
How about King Felix? Felix Hernandez.
All right, tell me why.
Seattle Mariners. I'm going to say because probably the king of either 2-1 or 0-2 losses. I'm not exactly sure on his stats, but I know he's way up there in wins, strikeouts. Just never seemed like they could put a team together around him.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, it's fair that obviously you're right. He's definitely had a great career, and they've never given him the support that he could get to the next level with. Let's say it that way. I don't know if he's the most wasted, though. Do you think on another team suddenly we're viewing his entire career differently? That's an interesting question to me. Tristan in Pittsburgh, who do you have as the most the superstar that's been the most wasted by his team?
Jason, I was a little bit torn on this one between Lionel Messi and the Argentine soccer team and Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers, but the Argentine soccer team has a lot more control over their personnel than the Green Bay Packers do over theirs. They haven't drafted a skill position player in the first round since they've drafted Aaron Rodgers, besides Jordan Love this year, of course. You know how that all is turning out right now. And so they haven't given him a whole lot of help in the first round. They've only drafted two offensive players in the first round, and only one of them panned out, and that was Brian Bulaga, offensive tackle out of Iowa. So I think the Green Bay Packers could have definitely helped Aaron Rodgers win a lot more Super Bowls than just one if they would have just helped him with some skill position players in the first round.
I like that call, actually, because we've had several tweets for Aaron Rodgers, too, because what you just said, just one. I mean, when you think back at the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, and Michael Luke Jr. and I do a show you can check out on YouTube every Monday where we get set for the Monday night matchup that week, and we look a little ahead at Monday Night Football and from a classic game, right, every week. And so a few weeks ago, it was a Packers game
from Packers Vikings when Brett Favre was making his return. And, you know, Junior said in the moment when you went back and watched him, you forget how Mahomesy and Aaron Rodgers was. And then you start thinking forward. I mean, if you talk about Patrick Mahomes in 15 years and we talk about one Super Bowl, won't we feel like that had been a waste of the level of talent that he has? So I'm buying that. I'm buying what you're selling with Aaron Rodgers. Ben, in Ohio, what do you got as the most wasted superstar by his team?
Hey, Fitz, thanks for taking my call, man. I got to tell you, if anybody can beat this, I'll buy you a steak dinner. Joe Thomas of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, here's a guy who never missed a game, played, you know, his heart out, started, you know, didn't miss plays, actually, not a game, you know, for I think it was 9 years running. And then, you know, we draft a guy like Johnny Manziel. You know, you got a walk-in Hall of Famer, Joe Thomas, pocket protection, you know, tackle that, you know, we don't utilize, and we didn't utilize him throughout his entire career. He would have been, I mean, he's a walk-in Hall of Famer anyway, but, you know, imagine what he would have been on a team like, you know, the Oakland Raiders or, you know, the here like Green Bay Packers or something like that, protecting Aaron Rodgers.
Well, yeah, and I love that one also because, you know, Joe Thomas loved the Browns so much. So when you talk about wasted, you're also talking about wasting, you know, sort of an era of a player that just absolutely loved that community and that team and everything they stand for. So, yeah, definitely wasted. Sean in Virginia, what do you got as the most wasted superstar of by his team?
You can tell that guy to go ahead and get me a steak dinner. I'd have to undoubtedly say Mike Trout, man. Until this upcoming season, they haven't given him anything.
Look, and you know what? I'll double down on Mike Trout. Mike Trout's a great call. Not only has he been wasted by his team, but we were even talking about it in the pre-show meeting today. Mike Trout's been wasted by all of baseball. I mean, you talk about a level of greatness that they just haven't figured out how to monetize. They haven't figured out how to make him a superstar to the level he should be. I understand that Mike Trout is a superstar, but he's not a walk into any Starbucks in the world and have people throw down their coffee and run to him and say, oh, my God, he's Mike Trout. And he has that level, that capability to be that person. They just haven't been able to capitalize on it. So I'll double down on Trout and say he's been wasted by his team and by his sport. Never wasted or Nature Valley Crunchy Bars. The satisfying crunch of Nature Valley Crunchy Bars can keep your family going. And with whole grains and real delicious honey, it's really tasty, too. Nature Valley Oats and Honey Crunchy Bars. All right, so anytime we're having a conversation about wasted talent, usually it comes back to quarterback. Frankly, I'm surprised nobody's come in and said Deshaun Watson yet, because I would put him near the top of that list in the NFL. So speaking of quarterbacks, we can't stop talking about Dak and his deal with the Cowboys. And now that Stephen Jones has brought in Andy Dalton, it raises a question. What's the level of confidence in a new deal for Dak with Stephen Jones? Marcus Spears joined Max and Stephen A. to debate that today on First Take.
I'm less confident because I think having Andy Dalton is going to encourage the Dallas Cowboys to play a little hardball and try to make things difficult. They're letting him know, we put you on the field last year making $2.1 million. We could put a quarterback that started in the league for the pretty much of the last 9 years out there, you know, and I think that's what the situation is.
I'm more confident the deal's going to get done. Number one, Dak might blink, which I think would be a mistake because he has a capable backup. You know, Dak is a little better than Andy Dalton so far. He ain't much, but he's a little better. And I'd much rather have him as a quarterback because of his age and the trajectory. But, like, when last seen, Dak's better than Andy Dalton. Sure, but Dalton's a starting caliber quarterback, more or less. And Dak is a little better than that. So he's more likely to probably, especially with the economic uncertainty because of this pandemic and recession going forward, maybe he's thinking, all right, you know, let me take $100 million instead of that plus an extra however much money I think I'm going to get or an opt out in a certain year. But beyond that, if he doesn't fold, I think the Cowboys will game this out. Let's say what Stephen Jones thinks he means is like, We can play without you, Dak. We have a guy who's good enough in case you're not on the field for injury or for something else, because Dak so far, knock wood, hasn't been hurt or hasn't missed games. So let's say they do that, and it works in terms of the leverage. Like, the Cowboys win a little more than you'd expect, whatever else. Do we see Andy Dalton, you know, quarterbacking a Super Bowl-winning team? Might they miss the playoffs? They might miss the playoffs even with Dak. They missed the playoffs last year with Dak, and the Eagles were all banged up. Cowboys were healthier, and they still missed the playoffs in a very weak division. So replace Dak with Andy Dalton, even though they've improved at receiver. Is it possible they win 8 or 9 games and still miss the playoffs? Sure, that's possible. And what would happen to the Cowboys and to the Jones family in the press if they did that because they played around with the season and had Andy Dalton in there instead of Dak? They don't want that. So what I see here is some cage rattling by the Joneses, and if Dak can see through it, he'll see. They've admitted, even while cage rattling, saber rattling, they've admitted that we're going to get a deal done. Stick to your position. The Joneses will cave. They always do. I'll remind everyone once again, Jerry Jones has said all his best deals he overpaid for. In other words, this is not a dude who's made his fortune on the margins. He's made his fortune with a big imagination and by the Dallas Cowboys. That's a big imagination. And Dak needs to rely on that. He's going to get paid.
Max, I tend to agree with you, but, man, in this situation, I'm less confident, man. I mean, listen, if you got a plan that is not too far off from your original and you can win with that plan, or you think you can win with that plan, or you perceivably are in just about as a good situation as you can be, even if you had Dak in the building, that definitely makes you think twice about making Dak by overpaying in your mind. Look, guys, I know we've been talking about this contract situation with Dak for a long time. Obviously, there is something going on between this negotiation that Dallas is not comfortable with. And Dak and his agent is not comfortable with. And I think it goes back to our original discussion about this contract, and that is the numbers. And Max, I get it, because you've been on that talking about Dallas will eventually cave and they will eventually overpay for Dak's services. I'm not sure anymore, man. Like, when you look at this situation, if Cooper Rush is the backup, I'm with you. I'm saying, yeah, I'm hell yeah, I'm confident that they get a deal done with Dak. Or Dak even comes back and play with a tender. I was on Get Up this morning with Jeff Saturday, and he said Dak more than likely will come back, sign his tag, play that season out, and pull a Kirk Cousins. That could be another option. But the fact that they signed Andy Dalton, and the fact that we talked about how much talent is on this roster and what quarterbacks can do, and you just said, Max, it's not that much of a difference in between Dak and Andy Dalton. We talking but $3 million?
Yeah, but guys, that's my point.
Having to pay $35.
Marcus, Stephen A., that's my point. They need to get a little better. They can't backslide. They were 8-8 last year. They're never going to have a better opportunity. The NFC East has never been weaker. The Eagles were totally banged up. Everyone was playing poorly, and they still missed the playoffs.
First Take, your take on ESPN News. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Gets you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We're going to keep taking your take on the most wasted athlete by his team. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you can get in on the fun conversation. Plus, a little preview coming of USC 249. That's next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, ESPN News. Heck, you can just tell your smart speaker. If you want to listen to some ESPN Radio, they'll hook you up with us. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Want to get your take? There's a bunch of you guys on hold. Which superstar player has been the most wasted by his team? Love some of these answers coming through. We'll get more of your take, but before we get there, obviously a lot of conversation about UFC 249 going to be happening. The question is, what's it going to be like for fighters fighting in front of no one? That's something that Stephen A. asked Tony Ferguson today on First Take.
The thought of performing without fans in attendance, one would think that it's a bit abnormal, but you guys would know better than us, particularly when you're training, practicing, et cetera, et cetera. There's no crowd in attendance at that particular moment in time. Can you tell me what kind of effect, if any at all, do you believe having no audience there, no fans there in attendance, how will that be for you?
For myself, I can't talk for Justin Gaethje or anybody else. When I was in The Ultimate Fighter, when I was on part of Team Lesnar, we had the only fans that were in the stands were the two teams that we were competing against. And that was obviously Team Dos Santos and Team Lesnar. And we were all for the same prize, which was to win that whole entire tournament. So, I mean, we had, it was zero like fighters or zero fans in there. Very quiet. It was kind of like an awkward wrestling match where you're wrestling your own teammate and nobody wants to cheer for somebody else. It's just all business, man. As soon as you walk through those cage doors, it's just three people inside that's allowed in there. And it's going to be myself, the ref, and Justin Gaethje. And it's going to be one heck of a fight, man. I'm going to be real. But crowd or no crowd, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get my W. We're very prepared for this fight.
First, take your take on ESPN News. That's all they can do at this point. Don't forget, Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals a priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. We're asking you which superstar player has been the most wasted by his team. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Philly Carl, who you got? What's your take?
Man, the most wasted player, man, is the Philadelphia 76ers organization wasted Allen Iverson's whole career. They never brought him a real legitimate superstar in there to help him. They brought Weber like towards the end of Weber's career, but Allen Iverson took a team full of role players to the championship, beat the Lakers the first game, Kobe and Shaq, but they never gave him any help. So, talent wasted.
Man, you are right, and today's the 18th anniversary of, obviously, the practice incident we talk so much about, but how much different would the legacy of Allen Iverson be if the Sixers had figured out how to give him enough talent to win a championship? I love that call. That's a good one. Allen, South Dakota, what do you have as the most wasted player by his team?
I think it's Adrian Peterson, and I don't even think it's close. Adrian Peterson in his prime was probably the best running back of all time. I think they gave him Christian Ponder and Tavares Jackson. Rest in peace, Tavares Jackson. But they gave him two quarterbacks that, in my opinion, besides the 1 year with Favre, that were not capable of exploiting the throwing threat. So I think Adrian Peterson, in my opinion.
Well, I love the take on it, but there might be another running back that's saying, hold my beer. Jeremy in Chattanooga, who do you have as the most wasted superstar by his team?
Barry Sanders.
Yep, tell me why.
They had no offensive line, no quarterback. It was just him. He was a one-man show.
I mean, you go back and you watch those highlights. Go ahead, Jeremy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, and you can always say Calvin Johnson as well. But Barry Sanders, man, Barry Sanders carried that team.
You're so right about that. And you watch those old highlights. It was 1-on-11 every single time he got the dang ball. Doug in Alabama, what's your take on the player most wasted by his team?
Yeah, as a Houston Texans fan, I have to actually say J.J. Watt. The only reason I wouldn't say Deshaun Watson is so far they wasted him, but if he doesn't end up leaving because Hopkins was traded, then I would say he's the most wasted. But we had a couple years when we had Schaub, who you know was really good before he started throwing all the pick sixes, and Andre Johnson, Arian Foster. Pretty much since then, I mean, we went through so many quarterbacks. So our defense can hold the other team, but we just can't score points when you're throwing Ryan Mallett, Tom Savage, T.J. Yates. Fitzpatrick was decent.
Yeah, you're right about this. I'll say this. I think they should do a 30 for 30 someday on the wasted talents of the Houston Texans. I mean, you can go back and make an all-star team out of the guys that they had there, and they just never figured out how to get the right combo to get it done. And we'll disagree with you on this. I think they've already wasted Deshaun Watson, especially that rookie contract. They should have been able to do more, and I don't know how Bill O'Brien's managed to be Teflon through all of it. That's one of the things I'll never understand. We're going to keep taking your take. Which superstar player has been the most wasted by his team? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. Plus, coming up, the NFL schedules will be released tonight. Which game will be Brady and the Bucks most difficult? We'll hear what First Take had to say about that next.